This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
If you're running a retail business, don't let disorganized order fulfillment cause chaos. Use ShipStation instead. From running a business out of your garage to multiple warehouses, ShipStation is ideal for every phase of your growth. Save time with one login for all your stores and by automating tasks, plus you'll get the best shipping rates from global carriers. Calm the chaos with the shipping software that delivers. Start a free trial at ShipStation.com/audio. That's ShipStation.com/audio.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate. Which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rewind a SmackDown. My name is Wei Ting. I'm in the driver's seat this week because John Pollock is going to be very busy this weekend, and also because I owe him one for Wednesday. So you're stuck with me, but that also means that you are stuck with our man, Neil Flanagan. Welcome back to the show.
Hello, Wei. No cap, even though I'm wearing one. It's great to be back with you anyway. Even though it's for my first 3-hour Rewind of SmackDown. How are you? What kind of day have you had, Wade?
Just a warning, everybody. I don't know if I'm going to be at 100% because I spent most of the day watching a 2-year-old who has been suffering from a bout of stomach flu that he caught that's been going around at his daycare. So we kept him at home, and I've just had a nightmare of a day from 6 a.m. onwards, cleaning up after just all sorts of messes. Yeah, I feel like I've become an expert at like upholstery cleaning at this point. So if you need any advice, Neil, I'm your guy.
Okay.
But man, just a bit of a nightmare. So thankfully, Neil has been, ever so helpful. You know, will actually be leading the news for us later on today in our Excel editions of these shows. Of course, those of you who are seeing this on your free feed know that Rewind a SmackDown is now available on the free feed. But along with all of our other shows that we do on Monday nights and also Wednesday nights, there are Excel editions which contain our news of the day discussions as well as feedback. And on Fridays, calls, especially exclusively for members of the Post Wrestling Cafe. So if you're listening to us for free, well, we thank you for your attention. But if you're listening to us as a postwrestlingcafe.com patron, we especially thank you, and we'll give you an extended version of the show a little bit later on. Perhaps the biggest benefit to a lot of people for signing up at the cafe is that they get timestamps delivered to their RSS feeds. So we offer that now as well. So just a little teaser up ahead, Neil, we'll be talking about the WWE TNA multi-year partnership. We'll be talking about UFC 311's main event being changed. We'll be talking about Conor McGregor and the latest with him. Maximum Carnage ratings from Dynamite on Wednesday. NXT ratings, as well as a roundup of this weekend's very, very busy wrestling offerings, including TNA Genesis, which Pollock will be returning to cover with Cena on Monday, and then also the GCW show from Hammerstein that I will be covering with Kate. So that's all that. Enough about me. How have you been, Neil?
I've been fine. I'm in admiration of you because that was a very professional opening for a guy who's had quite the day of it, you know?
Oh, boy. You know, I do try my best, but thank you so much. Yeah. How have you been? I always like to get an update because we talk to you pretty much on these shows about like once a month. I'm always curious to hear maybe like your thoughts on your current consumption of especially WWE programming.
Yeah. Well, at the moment, I mean, like you said, we haven't done one of these together for about a month, and that was before the the Raw on Netflix launch. So it's become very obvious which is the A show and which is not. and since January the 6th, and we saw that, I think, again tonight, which we'll get into. I will say, I think, not to sort of like jump the gun, I think tonight's show was an improvement on last week's. I don't know whether whether or not you'll be of the same mind as we get into.
I totally agree. Yes. Mm-hmm. That, not a very high bar, because last week's was like one of the worst, I think, shows I've seen out of the Levesque era. This was definitely a better bounce back to form. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As you and John said last week, and I had exactly the same thought, it wasn't even a good 2-hour SmackDown expanded to 3 hours. So my hopes weren't too high going into tonight, but it wasn't that bad.
No. We'll give a proper and fair assessment, you know, towards certainly the end of this particular review. But let's talk about the show. This is the WWE SmackDown from the Pechanga Arena, formerly the San Diego Sports Arena. 11,267 tickets distributed as of 7 p.m. Eastern time, according to WrestleTix. So doing pretty well, I would say. And the arena is of certain historical significance, because we start the show off with Wade Barrett and Joe Tessitore giving us a walk-in talk through the hallways of the arena into the crowd, talking about the history of this building, dating back to Muhammad Ali and Jimi Hendrix. And then into the modern day, Bad Bunny and John Jones. So just some corporate synergy there, you know, on both of those fronts. What did you think about this new this walk and talk presentation to start the show?
I don't mind that they're trying something different. It's pretty cool, you know. It's rather than just starting from behind the desk, they did something sort of similar, I think, last week, where they were either at ringside, or maybe even in the ring. I'm not sure. Someone in the chat room will probably remember. But I don't think they started at the desk last week either. But I quite like this wander through the arena beginning. It gave it a wee bit of impetus as the show got underway.
I could see them feeling like, hey, we're giving so much attention to Raw, okay? Let's give SmackDown something. Can you guys walk?
And talk?
Walk and talk, yeah. That was a sort of a television school special that they taught us, or at least like they were teaching cameramen to try, not to great effect, but I appreciate at least the fact that they're constantly thinking about ways that they can improve the presentation of these shows, you know. So these aren't difference makers, but I kind of also like the attention that they're giving to the building and the location, which we didn't always get, you know, under Vince.
Well, certainly not. You weren't even told what city they were in sometimes. You were told like two cities along to make it sound bigger.
So we start things off here because the transfer window is open. We have coming out in San Diego, Rey Mysterio, who shows up in his hometown, of course, to tremendous applause, tremendous ovation. First of all, it's interesting of note to have Joe Tessitore like pretty much lead by telling us about Penta's great debut on Monday and just maybe adding a little bit of extra importance to that debut. as Neil teased earlier in this review, Rey Mysterio, a man who is 50 years old at this point, starts off his promo by saying, "No cap, it feels great to be back home." How would you, like, Rey is a much cooler person than you and I will ever be, Neil, okay? He's you know, always up with the trends. Booyaka, booyaka. Okay. Yeah. How did he pull off this no cap mention?
As only Rey Mysterio can, you know. I mean, obviously it stuck with me, but it's you know, Rey can get away with it because he's Rey.
He can get away with a lot. He has tremendous respect, really, from everybody, certainly in this building, okay? If there's a night to pull out, a Gen Z, Gen Alpha, a catchphrase, it would be this night. I don't know if I don't know if I want to see Rey, like, try this again, but listen, okay? He's bold, and like the presentation is experimenting with new camera shots. Maybe he's experimenting with new slang. So Rey Mysterio basically tells us that he's entering the Rumble. Says when he won it in 2006, he did it for a friend that we all know well, as the Eddie chants start to fill the building. And out comes Kevin Owens, who wears a shirt that says, The Canadian son of a security system technician. Of course, in the style of Dusty's The American Dream, son of a plumber shirt. I know you're from Northern Ireland, but are you as tempted to get a shirt, get the shirt as I am?
Yes, in a word. And it's, again, I've spoken to you, Wei, about this before. I love the way that Kevin can blend being funny with being a terrific heel. It's a real skill. There's not too many can do it. But yeah, this gave me a laugh for sure, this shirt.
The T-shirt's sort of like communication of Kevin Owens has always been a big gimmick, but now especially so it feels like it, as part of this Cody Rhodes feud, because he's got so many great Dusty memorable shirts, I guess he could play off of. So we'll have a bit more of that a little bit later on. So a ton of boos for Kevin Owens. He is, of course, holding the Winged Eagle Championship. He says he's accomplished a lot. He's made event in WrestleMania twice. He's holding the belt that he always dreamt of holding as a child. But the only dream he has left is to main event a WrestleMania with Rey Mysterio. So he asked Rey, once he wins the Rumble, to pick him as the champion of choice. Rey, of course, reminds Owens that you're not really the champion. And at this, Owens gets really mad. Rey says to chill, you're delusional and you remind me of my son Dominic, which is the line that sets Owens off even more. As he tries to attack Rey with the belt, Rey dodges, threatens the 619 as Owens retreats to the back. And that is our first segment of the show.
Yeah, a good start to the show. You know, the hometown guy getting the big pop from the crowd. You know, probably their best heel at the moment on this roster, coming out to get the heat on, you know, the hottest baby face, and it's all done very well. And so that is that is my hot take on the beginning.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with this transfer window thing. Like, I wonder if after WrestleMania they will again reassess the benefit of having this like brand split, when you might pass up opportunities like, you know, a show being in San Diego and not being able to use a Rey Mysterio freely because of some like invisible wall that you've created. So I wonder,
yeah,
you know,
particularly if, you know, while they're on the West Coast, you know, Bailey could go to Raw to her hometown, Rey can come here to his hometown. I think it's, you know, I'm with you, Wei, the transfer window, such as it is, you know, the rules of it have not been explained. How long this window is going to be has not been explained. Really nothing around it has been explained other than, you know, it's a chance for talent to move. And we've had some very minor moves.
Well, you're a football fan, of course, Neil. Like, how long do transfer windows apply in football?
Well, there's quite a short run around Christmas time, but it's kind of minor. The summer transfer window is the big one, and that runs for, I think, I'll be quickly corrected if I'm wrong by some of the UK listeners, but it runs for most of the summer, I believe. And there's a very hard deadline of midnight on deadline day, and that's always a very fun time to be a football fan, because you're waiting for those last minute sort of transfer faxes to arrive.
Okay, so a transfer window entails that like trades are in play during that period, right? Period of about 2 months. Okay. So they've been very slow with these trades on the WWE. And I would even say like most of them aren't really trades. They're just like an answer to people signing. There's certainly a lot of negotiation going on, people showing up and even like guest starring on the other show, but no real concrete trades happening. So I guess like how much discussion do these people really need before they actually make their decision? You know,
I remember doing Rewind of SmackDown with you when I think it was the episode when the transfer window was announced, or either that or the week after. And we were talking about it then, and like quite a few talent from the other show was there. Gunther was there and he was shaking hands with Aldis backstage. And we were sort of going, oh, right, OK, it looks like a handshake deal is in place. Maybe Gunther goes to Raw. And so, you know, obviously we were expecting a bit of impetus that has not really materialized.
Support for this podcast comes from NordVPN. Many of our listeners already use Nord to access cheaper prices to AEW pay-per-views or ad-free international versions of WWE programming. But the benefits of a VPN go beyond streaming, especially as online criminal tactics are becoming increasingly sophisticated. One threat that's been on the rise is SIM swapping, where just a bit of your personal info can help criminals impersonate you to your cell provider and virtually transfer your SIM card to their phone. Using a trusted VPN like Nord, especially when using public Wi-Fi, helps keep your data safe from prying eyes on the same network. Over at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, you can sign up for a 2-year plan for just a few dollars per month and get 4 bonus months with our link. Again, nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Try it with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Stay safe and enjoy all the benefits of a secure internet with NordVPN. So we go backstage. Naomi and Bianca Belair are back there as Naomi reports back from talking to Nick Aldis, who says apparently that they still have no leads on who attacked Jade Cargill. Belair is surprised at hearing this, and they move on. Well, first of all, on this, interesting, in that Jade Cargill decided to chime in on social media, 8:43 p.m. Eastern time on Twitter. Mm-hmm. You sure? Question mark. All right. So if you weren't already suspicious enough at one of these two, this is Jade Cargill in character, potentially on X, playing along, pointing
the finger. It's good to know that she's conscious, you know, because as I think John alluded to last week, you know, this no update thing, has anyone thought to ask Jade? So it's good to know that at least she's alive, she's conscious, she's able to tweet. So that's good. And maybe her someone finger. Will ask her at some point.
Her fingers work, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Well, maybe she's not, she doesn't want to, you know, legally get into trouble by pointing the finger. But seems at least on Twitter, Jade Cargill is suspicious at one of these two, or at Nick Aldis, or somebody. So these two continue. They are the current, of course, tag team champions. Bianca Belair apologizes for the friendly fire incident in last week's match involving her braid attacking Naomi by accident. Naomi says, that's no problem. Let's get focused instead for tonight's match against Candice and Nia Jax. But she does suggest to Bianca to wrap her hair up so an incident like last week's does not happen. Mm. So, you know, the sort of like there's a mystery surrounding Jade's injury in real life as well as in storyline, so we don't exactly know like what the extent is and how long she'll be out for, but it definitely feels to me like it makes me wonder if Jade and Bianca's breakup was supposed to happen during this period anyway in the lead up to WrestleMania, and if a real injury might have taken Jade out, so they're essentially just putting Naomi into Jade's role and teasing now a breakup between Bianca and Naomi already, so that we might be able to get that same story. But what are your thoughts on the storyline so far?
It's as good, what you've just outlined is as good a theory as I've heard. I obviously don't know any more than anyone else, but my instinct is that there's a real injury that's being rehabbed at the moment, because this has gone on for so long without any real kind of hints towards resolution. So I think it could be that. Hopefully she's back in time for WrestleMania season, or even sooner than that, maybe a Royal Rumble appearance. But I've got no doubt they have a decent story, you know, kind of in their back pocket for this return.
Yeah. In any case, like, I'm enjoying what I'm currently seeing. You know, I think the chemistry between Naomi and Belair is fantastic, both in ring and also in these backstage segments. In particular, I feel like Naomi has been very underutilized as part of like this trio, and this gives her a great role, you know, a prime role, and potentially a big heel turn. You know, because I think for a lot of people, she still remains the prime suspect. So it's hard to also consider, though, because she is, as I think Wade Barrett or Joe Tessitore said, the friendliest person in the locker room. So it's hard to see heel turn. But because she's so friendly, you have to become suspicious as a wrestling fan, don't you?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
So, yeah, let's move on here. We got Nick Aldis in the back with Rey Mysterio. Rey has been granted his match with Kevin Owens tonight. And Cody Rhodes comes out to greet the two of them. He's coming out from the trainer's room, and he explains that he was getting his physical, so he was not able to help Rey earlier against Kevin Owens. Rey says, don't worry about it, just heal up. Cody says that he's fully cleared, and Aldis says he isn't sure if that's good news because he doesn't want Cody hurting himself again before WrestleMania. He presents Cody with an addendum for them to sign for the KO versus Cody Rhodes match at Rumble, because he can't have what happened at Saturday night's main event happen again. Cody says he will sign it when Kevin Owens does. So We are only sort of like left to guess what the contents of this addendum are, but what do you think, Neil?
Well, yeah, and we're none the wiser by the end of the show either, I believe, but it's unless I missed something. He mentions what happened at the last Saturday night's main events, so I guess it's some sort of, you know, no banned moves stipulation or something like that, you know, because he doesn't want what happened to Cody to happen again.
You mean like a real ban on pile drivers this time? Is that what you're saying?
Possibly. I don't know what else is in an addendum to a match contract, you know, but
yeah.
It's by the end of the show, we realize it's really just a device to string this story out till next week till Saturday night's main event signing.
Yeah, and of course, to maybe put a bit of added, danger to the match if both of them, you know, have some sort of agreement to allow all pile drivers or something like that. It's just putting more focus on, I think, that big spot, right?
That's where I think it's going. This contract addendum is supposed to make the match more safe and maybe like prevent banned moves. But in the end, it'll be we can do whatever we want as long as, you know, whoever... Yeah. Grabs the belts from the top of the ladder.
An addendum is like, I guess, one of those like nice legal words that like sounds big enough to be serious, you know, anyway.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. Let's go to Candice versus Candice and Nia Jax taking on Bianca Belair and Naomi in a non-title match. So unlike last week, we seem to be, as international viewers on Netflix, you and I, Neil, we're getting the action now between the commercial breaks. Mm-hmm. So we can tell that we're getting them because you'll either see like a dip in audio or a straight dip to black as they throw the commercial and we come back, of course, with all the action. And your thoughts on the experience of watching these matches with the commercials?
Interesting, because I did watch SmackDown Live last week it was kind of the first one as well on Netflix, and it was notable that we didn't get any of the Raw treatment, so there was no fading back to the in-ring action. I think all of the matches we did get that this time, and as you said, sometimes it was very obvious they were going to break because Tessa Torre would say "Don't go anywhere," you know, and the graphic would come up with the competitors' names at the bottom or whatever, you know, is normally there. Then it faded back from grey. Now, I'll take this case by case probably, but in some of the matches, it was pointless nothing. You know, it was the sort of thing we imagined that they almost always had in these ad breaks, you know. Very slow, deliberate moves, a lot of kind of heat on one person, and then a reversal of that just before the break. I would say there was a difference in the Kevin Owens Rey Mysterio break, which was actually very entertaining. But for the most part, there was nothing much. I don't think that those in the US should be annoyed about this or trying to seek out what they missed, because there wasn't much to it.
Yeah. Whether or not it works for you, I think, you know, will vary. I'll say for certainly as somebody who covers the show, like I don't need more wrestling on top of a show that's already 3 hours. But I will also say I'll often watch these shows, especially WWE shows, where like the action before the break isn't all that much to be excited about, and then crowds will come back and they're so hot, and I'll be like, "What the hell happened in this commercial break?" Now we get to see, and it's like it's not necessarily that the action is outstanding, but because usually it's the babyface getting beaten up. And just like a babyface getting beaten up, of course, is a necessary part of a pro wrestling match to lead to that sort of big reaction. And actually being able to see it and knowing that it's occurring, it makes a lot more sense why these crowds would be so hot. As I felt they were for this one, where, Bianca Belair is essentially getting beaten up for, I don't know, like 70% of this match. Mm-hmm. So, she gets the hot tag from Naomi and the crowd explodes. Belair, though, of course, eventually comes back in rather quickly. She goes for a handspring that Candice intercepts with a low drop kick. Good pressure from the heels, I felt, as Nia follows with a senton for two. Belair then finally hits her handspring moonsault to Candice. She covers, but as Nia jumps in to break with a leg drop, Belair gets out of the way, so Nia instead leg drops Candice. But Naomi then blind tags Belair, and she wins with her full Nelson bomb. Now, Tessa Torr called it a blind tag, I think maybe to insinuate some form of, like, dissent between the two, but there seemed to be no hint of that between the partners, like, in the celebration at all.
None at all. In fact, I kind of missed that reference from Tessa Torr. I didn't see any kind of friction between the two of them.
Your thoughts on the match?
Very solid tag match. I really do like yourself, like these two together. I like them backstage together. I like them in the ring together. I liked them when they were with Jade as the big three at WrestleMania. So when and if the heel turn comes, I'm quite looking forward to it, because if it's Naomi, and I think it is going to be, I know that you've gone back and forth a little way because it feels super obvious to people who've been following this that, she's the one who's never mentioned and all the rest of it. But I'm at this point, I'm very keen to see how Trinity can carry a heel character. I don't think we've seen it before, or if we have, it's way, way, way in the past and I don't remember it. She's such a crowd favourite. She's such a natural baby face. So, I think when they do break up, it'll be fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed the match. Very simple tag team formula. Good action, though. Satisfying, though. I was a bit surprised we didn't get more narrative about their tease breakup, but maybe that's just the way that they want to pace these things. Tessa Torr does mention that Belair and Naomi are headed to NXT on the road in Atlanta, where they will be facing Jakar Jackson and Lash Legend for the tag team titles. January 28th. Is when that match will be, the Atlanta show for NXT. All right, let's go up next to Bayley, who's with Byron Saxton, and clearly they were inspired by Cole and Tessa Torr because they also give us a walk and talk interview here. Bayley says that the match tonight against Tiffany Stratton is a huge match for her, says her reign was cut short at SummerSlam because of Tiffany Stratton, and she didn't feel like she achieved her potential as champion. So tonight it is personal against Tiffany Stratton in our main event. We then head back, and it's B-Fab with Meechan. Meechan is talking about Chelsea and how she should have won against her for the U.S. title last week. Then in comes Secret Hervis agent Piper Niven, as Chelsea has deemed her. She comes in to clear the path for Chelsea, who comes in to talk shit about Meechan. B-Fab then stands up for Meechan as Piper stands up for Chelsea. So B-Fab challenges Piper to a match tonight and then says she has her sights set on Chelsea's U.S. championship. So this seemed to me like our first like real substantive appearance from B-Fab since her much discussed U.S. title tournament opening round match, much I would say acclaimed, actually, appearance in that particular match.
Yeah,
so we're already maybe seeing one of the benefits of the U.S. title, and that it gives somebody on a B-Fab level some goal to actually realistically chase.
That was my hope at this point in the show. And again, it would happen to be one of the SmackDowns that you and I reviewed together when B-Fab made that, coming out party in the triple threat in the early part of the tournament. And we were extolling the virtues of B-Fab and how we might see more of her. So I was quite excited that we were going to get a B-Fab.
They were waiting for you to come back on Rewind of SmackDown have another match, because she has not had a match on SmackDown since, and that was what, like 2 months ago or something.
That's right. Yeah,
Yeah.
So they must have seen the post schedule that came out on Monday, midnight on Sunday for patron members, and thought, yes, it's time to roll out BFAB again.
The wrestling world revolves around the Post Wrestling Cafe schedule, so yes, that is understandable. Yes. We got up next Jimmy Uso taking on Carmelo Hayes. Jimmy Uso says, "Big Jim is him," in reference to Carmelo's catchphrase, of course. Hayes comes out cutting a promo before the match, talking about Jimmy living in the shadows of both his brother and Roman Reigns. So we go into the match. Jimmy goes up top for an Uso splash, but Hayes counters it with the first 48. Jimmy avoids the nothing but net, but then lands a super kick also for a two count. We get a spear from Jimmy as he heads up top for another splash. Jacob Fatu and Tama Tonga run in, and the match is DQ'd, and they beat up Jimmy Uso again for the second week in a row. I would say, like last week's match, this one didn't do a ton for me. I think Carmelo Hayes is great, but I think Jimmy Uso is still lacking something as a singles wrestler that I guess a lot of people maybe have put attention to based off of the WrestleMania match that he had with his brother. But just like how I think Jay has also kind of gone through some of those growing pains being a single star, I definitely feel like mm-hmm. we're starting off from maybe a lower point with Jimmy right now.
I agree. And it's sort of hard, you know, not to agree with Carmelo Hayes' points. And even though he's the heel coming out on the mic, although another little side item to that is it's the length of these SmackDown shows now with the extra hour. It's like a third extra time, but it feels like way more than that. The shows feel like almost double the length. So you've got the full entrances. You've got the sort of yapping on the mic, the back, you know, the backstage kind of hyping the match first and all of that. And to me, this was a nothing match. And Carmelo Hayes has really slipped down the rankings since he was kind of the first round pick and went straight into a match with Cody Rhodes, a non-title match with Cody Rhodes, and got that sort of rub and everything. You know, he has fallen to the bottom of the mid-card at this point. And what happened after the match did absolutely nothing for him. And likewise, Jimmy, who just disappears, Jacob and Tama appear.
Yeah, as far as like this bloodline stuff goes, it feels like we're back to the period after WrestleMania where like missing, you know, or Roman, missing the second biggest star in the group, Jey Uso in it. It's certainly missing Sami Zayn. You're left with Jimmy Uso, who like does not have the star power to be able to maintain, I think, a lot of this bloodline standard. So these have certainly felt like, you know, somewhat off weeks, but, you know, we're just coming off of the tribal combat and we're getting a bit more material here. And I would say Jacob Fatu being the person to actually step up because here comes Jacob Fatu. Carmelo Hayes tries to join in on the attack against Jimmy Uso. And as Neil was alluding to, Jacob Fatu destroys Carmelo Hayes, just like, you know, the biggest geek in the world. So we'll see if that's it for him or if there's actually something else going on. But I think he's probably just waiting for, you know, Trick Williams to get his call up as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. They clear the way for Solo Sikoa, and Solo Sikoa returns. He drops the mic. He doesn't like the reception that he's getting, so he drops the mic and he leaves the crowd.
Again, I think, Wei, there was a segment here that was probably in commercial in the US because
The walk-out.
He comes out in his red jacket. I think it goes to break in the US, and then he wanders around the ring really slowly. He takes the mic really, really slowly. Jacob Fatu addresses the crowd to tell them tell them to shut up and that they'll leave just like the Chargers left this terrible city or something like that. So there's this sort of sports team cheap heat line. Yes. And I felt that this was all in commercial break. US listeners, if you're there, can correct me if I'm wrong, but it felt very much like this was all kind of just to get the crowd really hyped for the return from break to the broadcast, which it worked.
Yeah. Again, if you've never been to one of these live events, often you might wonder, the guys walking out before the commercial, how are they entertaining this crowd for three minutes until he's able to actually start talking again between these commercial breaks? And I guess the answer is walk really slow okay, as Solo Sikoa does. And then also have a Jacob Fatu next to you who can rile up the crowd with some, you know, cheap heat here, which he was able to do during the commercial break. But then we come back, and of course, Solo Sikoa does not like the reception. He drops the mic, he leaves the ring, which leaves the room and the microphone for Jacob Fatu to pick up. And Jacob Fatu actually on air cuts a promo. He says he's tired of the disrespect, the hate. Even on my bad day, you still can't touch me. I don't care if you cheer or boo us. I won't let you boo and try to act like I never got mine. If you thought I was crazy, the bad news is I'm just getting started. And out comes LA Knight, who attacks them from behind. And then Braun Strowman comes back. If you remember, Tama and Jacob took him out about a month ago. So he comes back, and there's a big face-off between Strowman and Knight against Jacob. Or Strowman and Jacob Fatu, actually. And this is a match that they would announce later on for Saturday night's main event. And then, yeah. What did you think about Jacob Fatu in this segment?
Excellent. He's just got it, you know. He's got... I think most people probably have seen the Levesque clip of him sort of directing an entrance. It was either earlier today or yesterday it came out, and the focus of that was really Jacob Tama's doing his kind of that thing he does, a kind of animalistic kind of
hyena laugh.
But Jacob is just like, he's been told by Levesque to stare a hole through the camera, and he just does that really, really well. He's got such presence. He's very good on the mic as well. And there were what chants when he got into the cadence of that, but he just, he very easily kind of dispensed with it. Great.
Yeah. Like, so they're doing this whole thing where like they're dragging out the this sort of anticipation for what Solo Sikoa has to say. And I just don't even care, you know, because he's just not as interesting of a character, of a wrestler, or as a promo, as a Jacob Fatu. So I wonder if that's a little flawed, you know, because it's just, it's hard for me to actually anticipate a Solo Sikoa for promo for another week when I've already got a better Solo Sikoa, you know.
100%. It doesn't leave me sort of hanging for what Solo had to say. I don't. Like you, it doesn't really care. I don't really care when you've got Jacob doing it better.
Legado del Fantasma is in the back, and Escobar gives Los Garzas a pep talk ahead of their match against the Machine Guns later on. Says, no one respects us, so you have to take it. So that is our match. Los Garzas versus the Motor City Machine Guns in our tournament for a tag team titles shot. That is not really a tournament. And we're just as confused at the end of all of this, after tonight. So this is the fast work rate match of the show, where the Machine Guns are working over... Berto's legs. I forget that. Is he Humberto or Berto?
He's Berto these days, yeah.
Berto's legs with double dragon screws and then stereo figure fours against both he and Angel. Oh man, it's been so long. I can't keep up with their name changes. And anyway, springboard kick and spinebuster combo from the Garzas. Machine Gun set up Skull and Bones, but Pretty Deadly come in to interrupt. And they instead, though, inadvertently affect the Garzas. So they actually help the Machine Guns win using Skull and Bones. So Pretty Deadly have screwed the Garzas again after pointing the finger at them for their attacks on the Prophets. So the Machine Guns are maybe in line for a title shot. I mean, even Barrett is somewhat unclear, confused about this in commentary.
This is kind of daft. I mean, we have Tessitore at some point saying, yes, so this was not a formal tournament, just a common sense decision by Nick Aldis based on what was happening in the tag division. So, okay, but then why aren't Machine Guns getting their title shot? Because next week, well, we'll get to it, but next week they're not getting a title shot, or they're not off. They're taking on Pretty Deadly for reasons that escape me. I mean, they tried to interfere but failed. I think that would be enough of punishment for Pretty Deadly. But anyway, yeah, the match itself, high-paced, good fun. You know, I really like the Machine Guns. But this, what is going on with the tag division and kind of who gets the title shot, is just bonkers at the moment.
I would say overall, I think they're doing an okay job of like at least giving some identification to the teams that are in this division compared to maybe the state of this tag division, I don't know, like 6 months ago when it was just like, what, the Profits and DIY, you know, like, and sometimes it's just like a loop of either of them getting title shots. I think the scene is a bit healthier, but man, for all the praise that the Levesque, you know, booking gets, he does some really weird stuff sometimes, like with what's going on in this tag division, with the best of seven that really wasn't a best of seven, mm-hmm. and how that turned out between Hayes and Andrade. So this is maybe one of those.
Yeah, we'll get to it maybe with more in final thoughts way, but I just lately, and I mean from January 6th, really, have got the impression, and of course this is just complete speculation, that Levesque's focus is on Raw, and I suppose that it ought to be, because the Netflix launch is a massive thing. Yeah. It's global, you know, and it's, you know, it's the hottest thing in their domestic market as well. Some of these SmackDown shows have felt as though a Bruce Pritchard or a, you know, somebody like someone of that level is being given some sort of like, you've got to hit these points and off you go and you do it, you know. Mm. That's how it feels to me. It feels rather old school. It feels almost Vince era booking with some of these shows. Yeah. But maybe that also, maybe that's just a product of stretching this roster, which is built for 2 hours, over a 3 hour show. I don't know.
Up next, we got B-Fab taking on Piper Niven here. This is, of course, again, B-Fab's first match on SmackDown since that U.S. title tournament opening round. B-Fab uses Chelsea as a distraction to lure Piper into a trap. She delivers a neckbreaker into an X-Factor for a two count, then a float over DDT for a two count. B-Fab dives off the apron with a clothesline to Chelsea on the floor. Piper takes advantage of this distraction and hits her fireman's carry into a Michinoku driver and gives Niven the win. Were you surprised by the booking here as much as I was?
This was pretty much a squash, and yes, I was, because I thought even on commentary they were building up B-Fab. They were doing what we did. Mm-hmm. They were saying, you know, about all of the praise she got after the first round match in the US Championship tournament against Bayley and Candice. They mentioned she'd been training in the dungeon with Natalya and Tyson Kidd. They were really putting B-Fab over. And a few high kicks later, you know, this match was over. So, yeah, I was a bit surprised. Yeah. How brief this was.
Well, especially since they seem to be teasing B-Fab campaigning for some sort of U.S. title challenge, right, against Chelsea. Yeah. So I just thought logically you just have her beat Piper and then move on there. But instead it was Piper winning. And I would say in terms of reaction just to like B-Fab's in-ring work, I actually thought this was really flat, you know. Mm-hmm. Like
she didn't get to do much.
Yeah, yeah. From what I recall, like, I think the match from the last time had her do a lot of more impressive, like, big person spots, taking advantage of her length. And I don't know if this match offered much of that for her. You know, no. She had some unique offense, but nothing that really stood out or looked as impressive, nor did it receive much of great reaction. I actually thought a lot of her movements looked very telegraphed, like not even talking about the moves, but just like the way she would bounce, run into the ropes and jump into a powerbomb position, for instance. Looked like she was like more doing choreography rather than somebody who's actually in a fight. Kind of took me out of the immersion. So between Agreed. That and the booking, kind of, you know, cooled me off the B-Fab hype train a little bit this match.
And some of the Naomi style, you know, high kicks to the head, again, a little bit labored and really not quite as good as Naomi does them sort of thing. So yeah, I'm with you. Maybe my B-Fab mega fandom is slipping here, way.
Yeah, yeah, we're Omos fans now. Okay, we've jumped onto that. All right. You know, he's the new, he's got a big resurgence going on in Noah. So we're on the Omos train now. So Meechan comes out to save B-Fab from the 2-on-1, and it seems like we're getting some form of tag team feud. Maybe that's ultimately what this is all leading up to. All right, we got a little Bob Uecker tribute here, you know, showing clips of his history with the WWE, getting to the Hall of Fame in 2010, and Joe Tessitore. I thought it was actually very good at delivering this sort of a segment.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown, as myself and Wei Ting will be providing full shows containing news of the day, questions, and so much more going live on those nights for patrons. Plus, we will have coverage of Wrestle Kingdom 19, Wrestle Dynasty, The People vs. GCW, TNA Genesis, a Rewind Away retrospective on the Ric Flair-Ricky Steamboat feud of 1989, all of your regular shows, a Daredevil primer, and throughout the month of January, you get a free month if you sign up for an annual subscription. $6 a month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Tiffany Stratton cash-in. We see a recap of her cash-in showing reaction videos from various streamers as we get Byron Saxton talking to Tiffany Stratton. Oh boy.
Yep.
Tiffany Stratton says, so Byron says something to the effect of like, you made history 2 weeks ago by cashing in. And Tiffany stops her, says, Byron, Tiff story.
Get it right.
Yeah, yeah. So she just clearly, I don't know if, you know, we were the only ones to criticize her overuse of the Tiffany puns last week. Maybe she's just as a heel now deciding to lean that much into it. But God, I think they're awful. I think they're just like, if you're trying to get heat, I don't think it's the right type of heat. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts?
I'm just going to agree with you. The Tiffstery thing was an eye roller. It's not even a good pun. The, you know, sorry, Bailey, your dream will die because it's Tiffy time. That's, you know, that's how the promo ends. And then during, you know, as we'll get to during the match, Tessitore actually refers to her as a wrestler as Tiffy time continually, you know. So they're hammering us over the head with this catchphrase just way too much. It's tiresome.
Yeah, yeah. So she cuts a promo and Bailey says she doesn't have to recreate moments like Bailey does because she is the moment right now. She is the feeling. Rey Mysterio versus Kevin Owens here. This is our hometown star coming in and having a guest match. Victoria is shown ringside, so she's decided to show up here, a guest appearance. This is the first time we are apparently getting a singles match between Rey Mysterio and Kevin Owens, interestingly enough. So Owens comes out with the winged eagle. He kisses it the same way Brett does when he has to hand it off to the ringside official. He's also wearing a Rey Mysterio Hall of Fame t-shirt from the WWE. They have a bit of trouble getting over the top rope on a head scissors. I only found this to be interesting because KO stopped it and instead just decided to kick Rey, shoving him over the top. And I mean, in these situations, I'm always watching and just curious to know if there's improvisation going on or if this was all deliberate and planned. With two veterans like this, I wouldn't be surprised if it was just Owens improvising and calling, you know, hey, let's abort this. It wasn't working out. Let's do all of this instead, and we'll take us back to where we need to go. Because afterwards, presumably to recover, Rey ends up delivering a Rana off the apron to set KO up for the baseball side splash as we go into a commercial break. Did you have any of the same thoughts?
I agree with you. Yeah, there was definitely a bit of a. I won't go so far as to use the word botch, but a slip up of some sort here. And I think also that these two just made it better on the fly. That's what it looked like to me. And that shouldn't be surprising, I think, with two wrestlers as skilled as these guys.
During this commercial break, we actually get a bit of a guest appearance here from Aaliyah Mysterio. Little Aaliyah Mysterio sitting ringside here as Kevin Owens brings her dad in front of her and starts beating her until Rey, of course, reverses and slams Owens' head right in front of Aaliyah, who seemed to be really enjoying the action. And then Owens actually walks up to Aaliyah and pats her in the head, which garnered a pretty big reaction. So, you know, it almost seemed like they were teasing her for something, but knowing that this was in the commercial break, I mean, probably just, again, more improv from Kevin Owens here. So coming back from commercial, we have Owens fighting Rey off of the top rope as Owens does a bit of an Eddie shimmy and delivers a frog splash for a two count. We get a 619 for Rey Mysterio. But then Owens shoves the ref into Ray to knock him off the top before he can splash, and instead, Owens grabs Ray for a pop-up powerbomb, and Kevin Owens pins Mysterio in San Diego. Your thoughts on the result and also the match itself?
The result, I thought, was kind of predictable because, you know, KO needs the steam at the minute, you know, with the big match coming up with Cody. So that was fine. I expected that right from the opening angle that Kevin Owens would probably win. But it was probably the match of the show for me. Some will argue that the women's title match ought to get that because, you know, it's such a long, I guess, and, you know, and well-worked match. But this entertained me more. And just to rewind a little bit to the commercial break, it was one of those where I was glad to be an international viewer because Kevin was so entertaining with the spots outside of the ring, where instead of just, you know, working on the arm or, you know, whatever, you know, he was doing stuff in front of Victoria and then utilizing, as you said, Aaliyah and, you know, ruffling her hair, all of that. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this and I thought it was two pros really sort of delivering, particularly as had been mentioned on the broadcast, they'd not had a singles match before. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, very impressed.
Yeah, I thought it was a very entertaining match for a television match. You know, this, I mean, when you say like the first time meeting between these two and knowing like what they've accomplished, maybe like my expectations were almost a little too high. But,
sure.
You know, this isn't like, it's not like they're in PWG or something like that. This is like a WWE SmackDown match with a TV commercial break. And I was actually very satisfied with the result. Owens looked inspired and looked like he was having fun, certainly. And Ray is still able to make a lot of his signature spots look very good. So afterwards, Ray, Owens fakes shaking Ray's hand just to kick him in the gut for another powerbomb. As Cody Rhodes comes out to stop it, he's just medically cleared Cody Rhodes. He comes in and gives us a big pull apart as we afterwards get into the back, and Aldis is yelling at Cody and says that next week at Saturday night's main event, Cody and Kevin will relinquish their titles and sign their amended contracts in front of the world. When he says relinquish, he just means give them their title so that they can hang them up for the ladder match.
I think he even mentioned that so that they could be, you know, suspended above the ring. So it's not relinquish as in, you know, give them up, relinquish the championships. Just the belts.
So Aldis also says that somebody else will moderate it because he can't handle it, and it'll be San Antonio's favorite son, Shawn Michaels. So, of course, Shawn Michaels tying into the ladder match stipulation makes a lot of sense, adds some extra star power to Saturday night's main event, and gives us a big go-home talking segment ahead of the Rumble on NBC. What did you think about the decision to announce this?
Yeah, it seems a decent idea. I think I agree with you, Wei, when you said that, you know, this Saturday night's main event show is almost coming at a very difficult time in their schedule, you know, right ahead of Royal Rumble. You would kind of prefer that they're building to what else is going to be on the Rumble pay-per-view, except for just, you know, people declaring for the Rumble match. But yeah, for you know, they want to give the network TV show a lot, I assume, even though I don't think it set the world on fire, you know, last month. But yeah, happy enough with this.
Also announced for Saturday night's main event. Again, that's next Saturday. Jacob Fatu versus Braun Strowman. For SmackDown next week, we got LA Knight versus Tama Tonga. The Machine Guns versus Pretty Deadly. So whether or not this is for a number one contenders, I guess it wouldn't make sense for Pretty Deadly to be in line. But whatever. And that's all that's been announced for SmackDown. So we got DIY with Pretty Deadly backstage. Pretty Deadly admit that their interference didn't go as planned. Ciampa gets mad and says that they're a joke, and everybody's laughing at them. Gargano in their relationship sort of plays like good cop, where he comes in, tells them to get their act together, and tells them to make their lives easier so that they can eventually give them a title shot. So the manipulation continues, and here comes Apollo Crews to point that out to Pretty Deadly. And in comes Gargano to attack Crews pretty viciously, I might add. Mm-hmm. So Crews has been physically inserted into this feud now with DIY. Thoughts on Apollo Crews?
poor Apollo Crews, he just gets beaten up all the time, whether it's Jacob Batu, whether it's and Johnny Gargano on his own without even the help of Ciampa. So I don't know where he fits into all of this, because this is the tag team division and there's, you know, maybe some big return we're not thinking of, you know, to hook up with Apollo. But yeah, he's at the moment, he's just the definition of the backstage geek who seems to get beaten up.
Yeah. I totally forgot that he was a part of the crew that was beaten up by the Bloodline along with LA Knight. It looks like LA Knight is at least getting something, you know, involving Tama Tonga. Mm-hmm. But Cruz is just like left to somehow get beaten up now by the tag division. So there we go. We got a big teaser video here hyping up the return of Charlotte Flair. We got shots of her on a jet, a yacht, highlights of her career. And Charlotte is coming back.
Yeah. And it'll be a welcome return.
It will be. Yeah, I think, you know, the division certainly needs her level of star power. Certainly since the time that she's been away, I think there are so many new talents now that make fresh matchups for her. There are a lot of new talents coming up soon from NXT, I'm sure, that'll present a lot of interesting matches.
I also find it interesting that we've had such a level of star power for declaring for the Men's Royal Rumble match. And to my knowledge, we haven't really heard a peep about the women's Royal Rumble match.
Got Nia in there, I believe.
Nia, okay, you know, I think we need a bit more, given that it's, you know, so soon.
Yeah, true.
On there. But perhaps, you know, perhaps we get Becky, perhaps that's where we see Charlotte, you know, they always keep some things up their sleeve for a surprise.
Mm-hmm. And then we got our main event here for the Women's Championship. We have Bayley taking on Tiffany Stratton. This is Tiffany Stratton's first title defense. Roxanne Perez is shown ringside, continuing her feud with Bayley from NXT. Wade Barrett is on commentary criticizing Bayley for showing up on Raw and NXT, brawling with Jax and Perez, getting distracted ahead of this title match. And we go to commercial. We'll come back with Stratton delivering some very nice aggressive work targeting Bailey's shoulder. She traps Bailey under the ring skirt and delivers a big running hip attack to Bailey against the side of the ring. Out of nowhere, Bailey hits a Bailey to belly on the outside as we get through the final commercial break. Stratton again goes for the shoulder and she delivers her Swanton bomb before delivering a power bomb for a two count. She locks in a Fujiwara armbar to capitalize on the shoulder injury. Bailey blocks the Alabama Slam, then delivers a draping suplex off of the reinforced desk. Bailey then takes some time out to talk some shit to Roxanne in the front row. She then applies the bank statement, which Wade Barrett calls a torturous hold. Bailey to belly gets another two count as a sunset bomb into the turnbuckle gets another two count. Bailey then also hits a fireman's carry swing sidewalk slam for two. Stratton avoids the rose plant, hits the Alabama slam, and then finally the prettiest moonsault ever for the victory. I thought a really impressive match for the both of them. You know, I certainly in watching Stratton, I felt like I noticed an added level of aggression and seriousness from what she was presenting prior to becoming champion. And I do wonder if for her, the way that I think we saw her, some of her initial reactions after becoming a main roster talent and getting the receptions that she was receiving. Sometimes I feel like I could see the nerves on her face. And I feel like I would assume, you know, like with almost anybody being in this sort of position this quickly, holding the championship, I'm sure the pressure was on her. And she also seems to mean like the type of athlete where when the pressure is on her this much, she's going to deliver and she's going to perform and she's going to kill it. And I thought she did in this match. Like,
I agree 100%. She just doesn't feel too impressed. I remember the match with Becky and thinking, I wonder, you know, for an ex-gymnast, you know, and she's good, but is she always this good? You know, how much preparation, rehearsal had gone into that particular match. But since then, she's just continued to impress. And I think she's gone very far beyond the sort of former gymnast who looks super athletic into like a proper professional wrestler at this point, because this match was the guts of half an hour. And on the international feed, you know, there wasn't much let up during the breaks either. So we saw all of it, and it was very good. The only thing I guess that I would pick holes in is not the match itself. It's the presentation of the match, because I don't think anybody with who watches professional wrestling thought for a moment that there would be a title change here. So I don't think the result was ever in any doubt. And yet, you know, there was an awful lot of build up during the show. We had a tale of the tape. We had interviews with both competitors. I'm not criticizing that too much, as, you know, a main event title match should probably have those things. But again, the result was really not in doubt. And the only other thing to surprise me, I guess, was that Roxanne did not get involved. I assumed there might be, not the match being thrown out or anything like that, but there might be some involvement there, because it really does look like a Bayley-Roxanne feud is perhaps in the offing.
Yeah, that felt like her bigger program this week than really the Stratton match. I mean, even on Monday, the Stratton match kind of felt like a bit of an afterthought. You know, and it's always a challenge with first title defenses, especially after a Money in the Bank cash-in, right? Like, it's almost impossible to take a first-time challenger seriously. So, I mean, as much as I think I was hoping for in this one was a great in-ring performance, and I actually felt very, like, my interest in Stratton was somewhat renewed in seeing, like, her sort of improved aggression and improved seriousness, especially her shoulder work here. So I'm looking forward to what she offers in-ring. In terms of story, I mean, Bayley, I feel at this point, is sort of transitioning to more of like the veteran's role, where she's almost a bit of a gatekeeper for people. Like, she had her big moment this year at WrestleMania, and I don't know if, especially with the amount of talent that's waiting in NXT coming up in the women's division, I do wonder, like, if she will have many more of those opportunities left, or instead her role now may be similar to maybe what a Natalia's role was, you know, like in years past, being the great veteran with some name value for somebody like a Stratton to beat in order to maybe advance.
Yeah, I don't think that needs to be a permanent situation for Bayley by any means, because she's still young and she's great. But that does seem to be the role that she's being slotted into right now, because Tiffany's going to hold this title at least for, I mean, with Levesque, apart from the, even the women's tag titles seem to be staying in place for more than, you know, a month at a time, which is a record. So he seems to favour titles hanging around for a bit with the holder. So I think Tiffany is going to hold that belt for a bit.
Who do you see for Stratton at Mania?
If it goes as far as Mania, I really couldn't say at this point. It might be whoever wins the Rumble. And again, I don't know, because we've got so little... we've got so little people in the frame for that. But I dare say we're going to have a returning Becky Lynch. I dare say we're going to have we know we're going to have a returning Charlotte. That's been all but been confirmed at this point. So those are people that you could certainly slot into a main event, like straight away, virtually, you know, for either of the world titles for the women.
I think so.
Which is all to say that Bayley doesn't really fit into that role at the moment.
I feel Charlotte might be a prime candidate, you know, like for a role like that. And I feel like the mention of that will already have a lot of people groaning, you know, like Charlotte's just going to come in and, like, you know, get a WrestleMania title shot. Yeah. But just looking at, like, the landscape and seeing who's available, it seems like Ripley is tied up with. Well, we'll see. We don't exactly know, but I can't really see Ripley versus Stratton right now. I don't know if I see really anybody from Raw at the moment, but, like, I could certainly see a Charlotte coming in. You know, you have the two gymnasts, like, having a WrestleMania flippy shit type of match, yeah. which could be interesting.
Moonsault City.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, your thoughts overall on tonight's SmackDown?
I thought it was an improvement on last week, which, like you said at this off the top, is not a high bar. I still find it like they haven't bolstered the roster. This week we got Ray, you know, as the sole transfer window appearance, but the SmackDown roster is lighter than the Raw one because it's based off a draft where it's sort of 2 for 3 picks. We didn't get any Wyatt Six, even though I think they've been they'd been announced for as one of the acts that had moved to SmackDown, so I sort of expected them to appear. So it's no Shinsuke, no Giovanni Vinci way. I mean,
come on. Oh, man. Thumbs down.
Yeah. So it still feels like a two-hour show padded out. We're getting these full entrances. We're getting more backstage hype for the matches than we ought to maybe get. We'll get to steal John's thunder. We're getting unannounced matches. You know, I'm going off to see Nick Aldis to see whether we can get this booked for tonight. And we had, I think, at least two of those. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot not to be mad about. And I mean that in a good way. not to go crazy in a good way about with SmackDown, but you know, hopefully it'll improve if this 3 hours is going to stick around until June.
I felt tonight's show was more of the standard that I've come to expect out of like modern day WWE, you know, for either for a 2 hour show or a 3 hour show. This felt like it was a show that was less lazily put together than last week's, less reliant on the trope of just like, you know, GMs making matches. I mean, it still had that, but it didn't really bother me as much on the show. I think having Ray a part of it greatly improved its specialness. You know, you're still talking about a show that I think is very reliant on having a Roman Reigns attached to it, and his presence continues to be missing. Cody didn't have a big role in this one, you know, because he's still coming back from this quote-unquote injury. I was overall a lot more satisfied with tonight's show, and hopefully last week was just the result of maybe too much effort, too much energy being put into the Netflix debut. So those are our thoughts on tonight's SmackDown. We will be talking to the Post Wrestling Cafe for some of their thoughts over in the XL edition of the show, where Neil and I will be also talking about the day's news, again, talking about the WWE TNA multi-year relationship, some UFC notes, Dynamite ratings, NXT ratings, and also a bit of a roundup of the wrestling cards that are coming out this weekend. So thank you guys for watching us, whether on the free feed, but those of you that are watching us live, here comes the news.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, it's your home for XL editions of Rewind to Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown as we go live for our patrons on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday with XL editions containing the news of the day, questions, and feedback. And throughout the month of January, you get a free month when you sign up for a full year. PostWrestlingCafe.com.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.